We arrive here today to debate at social distances from each other.
There's no doubt that the old politics of the two-party system is now gone and over.
I don't need lectures from you or anybody on the Sinn Féin side of the house.
We're very reluctant to say what's red lines, but we do have to take climate seriously.
There's going to be constant criticism, there's going to be a lot of disappointment, and whoever goes into government is going to be unpopular.
Okay. Hello, and you're very welcome to RTE News' Your Politics podcast, the podcast that tries to tell you what's going on behind those closed doors, what's really happening in the political world. I'm joined today by Sandra Hurley, Micheál Lehane and Tommy Mescal of our political division. Sandra, if I can start with you, restrictions, they're in place, level 5, for January, due to be reconsidered around the 27th, but we're learning more about what's going to happen in February.
Yes, I think, Paul, if you had any parties planned for February, if you were being brave enough to schedule anything in, you're going to have to cancel that, because no surprise that really February is going to look much the same as January. Leo Varadkar said as much in the Dáil today. The reports from the parliamentary party meetings last night, both the Taoiseach and Simon Coveney told the different meetings that it was unlikely that restrictions are going to be eased. So what seems to be happening is NPHET will meet today. Their advice will go to government. The Cabinet Subcommittee on COVID will meet on Monday, and then it'll be considered at a full Cabinet meeting on Tuesday. But generally, most of the restrictions are going to continue. Leo Varadkar did say that the schools would be considered separately, and he also suggested construction as well could be something that might come back a little sooner. But no surprise given the numbers. Also, a minister said to me in the last while that given that the space we're in at the moment, that there's not going to be any pushback, really. They're not in a space where the government could push back against NPHET advice, and you would not expect NPHET to say that we're in a position now where we can start opening up. So it's going to continue as is, I'm afraid.
Micheál, you were looking at the last letter that NPHET sent to the government. It had some interesting statistics, both on the projected death toll in the month of January, which is rather stark, and also on this issue of travel, which has been a huge sort of campaign for parties like the Social Democrats and also for People Before Profit who want tougher restrictions.
Yeah, very strong advice. That's after NPHET met on this day last week, and they said in the clearest terms possible that they didn't believe that that measure that's in place at the moment of people having to have a pre-flight tester before they come into Ireland 72 hours beforehand, that that was sufficiently robust to prevent the spread of the virus, because they said even when that system is working at its optimum level, it misses about 40% of cases. And then stark figures too on what's likely to happen over the course of this month. NPHET saying that it's estimated that between 500 and 1,000 people will die here as a result of the virus. So all that suggesting that this remains an extremely difficult period. And as Sandra was saying, that means there will be no movement at all, you sense, when the Cabinet meets on Tuesday, or little room for movement. But I do think that distinction is being made, and it's being made in clearer terms with every hour that passes, really, around schools and construction. You heard it from the Taoiseach and the Dáil Chamber. Also, the Taoiseach earlier this morning talking about those two particular groups being looked at separately. So I think the expectation will be that construction will come back at some point in February. A large amount of construction is continuing anyway for what are deemed essential projects, but this would be extended to all construction work, and then the schools as well. The expectation, if you could call it that, among, I'd say, a majority of the Cabinet at the moment, is that it should be possible, perhaps after the midterm break, that would be in the last week in February, that schools might be able to return at that point.
I suppose if we try and look at just picking up on that tone that Micheál was taking there, Sandra, he's talking about some of the positives, that there are things on the horizon. Number one, that the actual COVID numbers are now to around 2,000, still huge, but in the context of where we were having 6,000 daily cases, that's quite a reduction. And there must also be some mapping or sequencing being planned by the government about how we're going to get out of this, given that vaccines are finally landing, vaccines are finally being put into people's arms.
Yes, everything hinges on the vaccines, and the Minister for Health and others involved in the vaccine rollout have, I think, been kind of slightly bamboozling us with different figures every day of where the targets are and how many vaccinations have taken place. And another one today, 122,000 vaccinations apparently have now taken place across the country. They seem to be pretty much keeping up with the supply from what I can see. There's not too much of a lag there in terms of rolling out what they actually have. But of course, now we're getting into the bigger issues around transparency and fairness. And that, you know, was always paramount to the success of the vaccination scheme. And that certainly broke down this week with those stories in relation to the Coombe in particular, family members of the master getting vaccinations, also the Rotunda and Kerry Hospital. And Stephen Donnelly and Paul Reid very clear today that, you know, it didn't really require the full investigation to know that somebody's family members shouldn't be getting the vaccines. That was very clear. And the minister very much underlining that even though a detailed protocol hadn't been announced by that stage in relation to the Coombe, that the main protocol was in place. And he is suggesting that that really should have been enough for everybody to know. But what we're seeing is a lot of pressure now from various other groups, from be it carers, dentists. I think TDs are being inundated with contacts from individuals trying to find out when are they getting the vaccination, where are they in the prioritisation, if it's not completely clear. Leo Varadkar suggested today that after the three top groups are done, that's people in long-term care, the over 70s and the frontline healthcare workers, he suggested that then might be the time for the advisory committee on the immunisations to maybe look again at the prioritisation and I think to flesh it out. But we're going to hear so much more about this, I think.
Micheál, if I can pick up on the question of vaccines with you and the sort of interesting phenomenon in which we're getting contrasting numbers from different members of government as to who has actually received the vaccine. The Minister for Health, Stephen Donnelly, is continually sending out updates. But what opposition parties are seeking is an informed, regular blowout of those stats of what's happened and projections for the following week. That simply hasn't materialised. Why not?
No, and there was talk about a central hub, which is there, but it's not being updated every day. And the only reason that the health minister could give for that when he was interviewed on the News of One earlier in the week is that when vaccines are being administered in some nursing homes, well, maybe the broadband or the 4G capability isn't there to log it straight into an electronic system. Now, that doesn't seem like the best reason in the world not to get that information out every day. But what you have seen is that emphasis on next Sunday, and it is now estimated that 146,000 people will be vaccinated by next Sunday, and that should include about half of all frontline health workers. But of course, that means half haven't been vaccinated, and that seems to have been the greatest pressure point on government throughout the week. Those huge numbers of people working at the coalface who still haven't received their first dose. I suppose government will point to that other figure, that figure of just under 4,000 people who at the close of the week should have received both doses and be fully vaccinated.
We will pick up on the question of vaccine rollout in the context of Europe with our reporter, Tommy Mescal. But Sandra, if I can bring back to you the question and the challenge that faces this government. How is Micheál Martin performing? How is his Fianna Fáil colleague, Stephen Donnelly, performing in the public's mind? Because we all believe that this is a huge opportunity for Fianna Fáil. Get the vaccine right, get the rollout right, and that there would be political dividends for them.
Yes, no question on the political dividends. You know, the government that can lead the country out of the pandemic and get us all vaccinated would be, you'd imagine, you would think would get, we be rewarded down the line. How are they doing? I think it's a little mixed. You know, we've seen those, for example, videos on social media. There was one from Nina Hospital, I think was it last week, from frontline nurses, you know, really upset because they hadn't yet been vaccinated. We've seen TDs complain that their area today, it was Limerick and Clare, you know, that they, the hospitals in their area hadn't been vaccinated when others have been. And I think it goes back to what Micheál was talking about there, about that lack of transparency. Why are we not getting a centralised hub that can detail where the vaccinations have taken place, how many have taken place amongst the various groups? So I think they're handling it okay at the moment, but it's going to have to they're going to have more pressure really when it ramps up, and they are dealing with much more vaccines. Everyone says the AstraZeneca one is the game changer. Hopefully that will begin to arrive next month. I think politically what's going to be really tricky is that the government has been emphasising that there's no political involvement in the prioritisation. It is handled by a separate, that NIAC group, although it's kind of rubber stamped then agreed by NPHET. But the government is ultimately accountable for all of this. That simply is the political reality. The buck stops with the government, and very much so it rests on the Taoiseach and the Minister for Health.
Micheál, a related subject is the question of schools, and in particular special schools. How would you characterise what's happened over the past week? Because we had both children and their parents promised that schools were open today, and they're not.
Yeah, and I think the acute awareness within government is that this has been, we'll say, got wrong twice, really, because it was promised twice and it didn't get over the line. So that can't happen a third time. At the same time, there is a fair degree of confidence privately that the schools will reopen, the schools for children with special needs and the special classes in the mainstream schools for those children, that this will happen. It may take a little bit longer than initially anticipated. But of course, there are questions for the senior minister involved and the junior minister involved too, about what appeared to be making big promises, as the opposition claim, but not having the work done to deliver on it. Now, governments say something changed in the early part of the week when the unions picked up the serious level of anxiety among those who would have to return to do the teaching and do the assistance in those schools and classes. However, there's no doubt there were several political missteps here, but it's one that perhaps will be resolved. If it isn't, you can see real pressure on government. And of course, there is too the possibility of legal action being taken by some parents on behalf of their children with special needs to try and get those schools open. I thought there was an interesting point too from those reports that we heard from the Fianna Fáil Parliamentary Party last night, where the Education Minister is now clearly making a distinction between getting leaving certs back and getting special schools back. Of course, they were initially part of the one project for government, but that didn't work. So you seem to be looking at the first step in resuming education is special needs education. And then it's a question of what comes next. Could you interpret that, though? Could you interpret that moving away of the pairing as the first steps to a decision being taken about the leaving cert and perhaps some flexibility or choice from that government position, which up to now has been that ambition to have a traditional leaving cert only this summer?
Special schools, leaving cert, huge challenges for the Education Minister, Norma Foley. To what extent do you believe, Sandra Hurley, that there is pressure within the government backbenches about how she's been handling it, or are they supportive? Because once you look at the opposition side of Dáil Éireann, clearly they feel she's lost it and the Taoiseach needs to intervene to sort this out.
Yes, I mean, that point about the opposition has been put very strongly by, you know, Labour's Eoin O'Riordan in particular. In terms of how she has handled it herself, I think there had been a lot of support for her for getting the reopening of schools over the line back in September and for keeping them open. But now there is much bigger questions, because all TDs are getting asked this locally about their own schools. There's questions about why she didn't have a plan in place and how she has handled the negotiations with the unions. Making that first announcement when she hadn't got the agreement of the unions, that was a clear mistake. And then secondly, there was questions asked about the tone she struck this week, particularly on Morning Ireland, where she said that the union leader, John Boyle from the INTO, who had been on just before her, she said that he was being incredibly disingenuous about something. And people have asked questions about taking that tone, because ultimately you want to work with the unions and get them on board, and to fire out something like that publicly might play in certain quarters, but perhaps it might sacrifice the sort of agreement that you need and the goodwill that you need to create with the union. So yes, yeah. I think she the questions are being asked of her at the moment.
That issue of being disingenuous, Micheál, is related to the INTO General Secretary suggesting that if the Minister for Education had instructed, or the department had instructed, the teachers to go to school, well, they would have. And she was saying, you know, that simply wasn't the case, because there'd been so much question and blockage from the union side in relation to the health and safety of the staff returning to school. To what extent does the minister have to try and maybe answer two blocks of people? One is pressure within their own government, but also some people who have concerns that it would appear possibly that it is the unions dictating the terms on the return to school rather than the government leading and ensuring that what they want actually happens.
Yeah. If you listen to the Taoiseach's comments yesterday, it seems interesting on that score, because there appears to have been clearly a level of anxiety within those teachers and those special needs assistants who will be required to go back to school. The government seemed to suggest that the unions hadn't fully grasped this as of last Friday, and that only became apparent to them later. Whether that's true or not, maybe that isn't the case, but that seems to be the government defence. And as it stands now, there seems to be an overall view within Leinster House that a little bit more time is needed and that you have to see an improvement on the virus rate before anyone can be expected to go back into the classroom. That something was there. There was a degree of apprehension that perhaps certainly on the political side wasn't fully given the credence it should have been at a point last week. And of course, those errors and that misjudgment, perhaps, if you like, does rest with the Education Minister primarily, because she was the one leading it. But strong defence from the Taoiseach among her own colleagues last night, saying that she was doing her best, that these weren't normal industrial relations negotiations. I think you have to ask the question too, though. Norma Foley is a first-time minister, and she is someone who was appointed by a Taoiseach whose central ambition throughout all of this has been to keep education going and to get schools open. How much of what she was trying to do was trying to meet that particular ambition and that particular target? And could you ask the question then, if it was someone who maybe wasn't a more experienced minister but had been around the political system and had been in Leinster House a lot longer and had worked with Micheál Martin a lot longer, would they have taken a slightly more cautious or slower approach to things? I think that's a question that has to be asked.
Sandra Hurley, Micheál Lehan has to unfortunately leave us now just to go off and work on another story. But Sandra, if I can pick up on one point that Micheál put his finger on there, which was when the Taoiseach Micheál Martin was in the Dáil and discussing this controversy yesterday, he suggested that if it was the case that the numbers went down, then it would probably open up an opportunity for there to be further engagement. And that seemed to be suggesting that the way out of this trouble now, the way to deal with it, is to try and get everyone bored, possibly to ensure that the transmission and the daily figures were at a certain level, and that would unlock the problem. That would take away the anxiety of teachers. That would unlock the concerns related to public health. That would ensure that the schools could open. Does that seem to be the pathway that we're going to get out of this?
I think at this stage it probably is the only pathway, but perhaps does that represent a failure then of managing to negotiate some sort of agreement with the unions? That, you know, the example has been given of Northern Ireland, where there is a very high level of COVID at the moment also, and special schools are still open. So yes, that certainly is what the Taoiseach said yesterday. Given that cases are now still well over 2,000, you'd have to imagine if they were going back to November levels, which has been suggested, that they'd have to be back to the low hundreds. And we may be some time away from that. So I think that would be very disappointing for some of the parents involved too. And we've seen so many kind of heart-wrenching stories of parents who are having to look after their children and watching them regress.
We're going to broaden out our conversation, because Ireland isn't the only European member state which has concerns about getting access to vaccine, ensuring that we continue to get the adequate supply and therefore can implement our rollout plan. Our reporter Tommy Mescal is joining Your Politics podcast. It's his first time. Good afternoon to you, Tommy Mescal.
Hi there, Paul.
Excellent. Good to hear from you. Just can you give us a flavour of what was being discussed at the European Parliament and what national concerns were you hearing when you were listening to the debate?
Sure. What was interesting, I thought, were the parallels actually between the concerns that you hear around vaccine rollout here at home and the concerns at European level. So this week we heard MEPs debating the global rollout strategy, and they expressed concern around transparency and the need to ensure no countries skip the queue. There were also calls for a daily update on how many Europeans have been vaccinated. And we've heard similar pleas here before in an Irish context. So over in Europe, the EU Health Commissioner has written to all health ministers asking them to inform the ECDC twice weekly on the rollout of vaccines. And the European Commission has recently said that by summer 2021, member states should have vaccinated a minimum of 70% of the adult population. Now, when the
Sorry, go on, Tommy.
I was just going to say, in the Parliament then this week, some of the concerns that individual MEPs were expressing were around, you would have heard the story around Germany with their bilateral agreement to get extra vaccines from Pfizer-BioNTech. There was a lot of anger over that. It would provide them with an additional 50 million doses that deal with Pfizer and CureVac. And there's some, I suppose, doubt over whether it's really legal, given that it's clearly set out that there is a European unity on this and that member states must adhere to that. And there could be no, you know, breaking the rules. Otherwise, perhaps smaller countries could end up being the big losers there.
I suppose what you're getting there is two issues. One is the question of fairness within the European Union, so that larger member states like Germany aren't able to, use a non-diplomatic phrase, pull a fast one. And then you've got a wider global issue, which is a moral one, which is it right and appropriate that countries or entities like the European Union are able to suck up all of the vaccine while other countries, poorer countries, are simply have to wait in line? In other words, their citizens die until it finally reaches them.
Yeah, and a number of MEPs expressed concerns around that, saying that, you know, we have to be mindful that there are poorer countries that are, you know, waiting in the sidelines whilst the, you know, richer countries, you know, get prepared and, you know, join the race to vaccinate as many citizens as they can. And you've heard of that COVAX scheme, and the EU has contributed to that, and that is a scheme that hopes to address that issue. And several MEPs brought that up during the debate on Tuesday, just hoping to ensure that the Commission are mindful of that, and that we don't, I suppose, get caught up in our own race, that we're mindful that this is a global effort, that you know, we're trying to reopen the world, I suppose, not just our own individual countries.
Well, speaking about reopening the world, we've got a US president just inaugurated who's reopening the United States to engaging with partners around the world, unlike the predecessor, Donald Trump. What were people in the European Parliament saying about Joe Biden?
A new dawn is a phrase that was used many times over. European Council President Charles Michel and the Commission President as well, Ursula von der Leyen, both welcomed the Biden presidency, describing it as an opportunity to rejuvenate transatlantic ties. Ursula von der Leyen said, after four long years, Europe has a friend in the White House. So perhaps she's not going to miss Donald Trump too much. And we've seen the Biden administration already making efforts to jump onto the global stage once again, you know, committing to rejoining the Paris Accord and that. But there were also, you know, words of caution too expressed by MEPs during a debate on Wednesday, saying that, you know, we must be mindful that a huge proportion of Americans voted for Donald Trump. They have legitimate concerns, and that, I suppose, we shouldn't get caught up in the, you know, MEPs shouldn't get caught up in the excitement of the Biden administration, that, you know, there are serious concerns that must be addressed, such as online disinformation and inequality and things like that.
Yeah, so some MEPs also talking about that Democratic presidents were far more likely to engage in conflicts around the world, and that we needed to be watch out that Joe Biden wasn't going to follow in the steps of some of his predecessors. But one other topic, just bringing it back home, Sandro, just wanted to briefly engage you with, was the question of Sinn Féin's Piers Doherty having a freedom of information search, coming up with some new detail, he said, in relation to the Taoiseach, the Leo Varadkar, and him giving or leaking a GP contract to his friend who happened to be the head of one of the GP organisations. It's something which he apologised for. He said he had sole responsibility for. But to what extent, it's only been really rolling over the past 24 hours. Is there something new at the core of this which could cause problems for Leo Varadkar, do you think?
Yeah, I think the first thing to say is that Leo Varadkar would have been very happy to see the back of this last November after, you know, apologising to the Dáil. It was all really embarrassing. It was all on his head. It was something that he did in terms of leaking a document to a friend. And he admitted that he shouldn't have done it. And he would have thought that it was in the past. So, yes, Piers Doherty has these new documents. He says there's something new in it in relation to some... What it seems to have unearthed is in relation to the timeline in April of 2019 that Simon Harris on a particular date was looking for a final copy of this agreement with the IMO, and that officials were kind of rebuffing him, saying that it wasn't finalised, they couldn't give it to him yet, and negotiations were still going on. And Leo Varadkar, from the timeline we understand, had given the document to his friend a little before that. So I suppose there was a few things at issue here. Did Leo Varadkar have the document before the Minister for Health? Had he changed his story? And Piers Doherty pressed him on that today. He said that his defence was in tatters now. But Leo Varadkar said he hadn't changed his story. He said that Simon Harris was looking for a final version of the document, that Simon Harris had the draft copy, and it was Simon Harris who gave him the draft copy that he passed on to Matthew O'Toole. So he said he stuck to his story. He said that there were some changes in the final document, but he said that they were minor ones. That's what he said back in November as well. And he said there was nothing secret in it and that the final version didn't go back to Cabinet. So at this stage, I'm not sure that there's really a whole lot in this. Obviously, Piers Doherty believes that it is. He thinks it has unearthed some very serious questions, and Mary Lou MacDonald has written to the Taoiseach about it as well. I'm not convinced that the rest of the opposition is very exercised. I know that Labour's Eoin O'Riordan was on an RTÉ programme earlier, and he said that the party wasn't really particularly excited about this, but they would discuss it tomorrow. So I'm not convinced it's going to roll much further, and that maybe that controversy for Leo Varadkar, while it is one that it was deeply embarrassing and he shouldn't have got involved with, that maybe it is in the past.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see once all of the correspondence comes out, once the Taoiseach replies, just to see if there's anything more on it or if it peters out. But it does seem to be something that's hanging around Leo Varadkar's neck. I think on that point, we'll just leave it there. I'd like to thank Sandra Hurley, Micheál Lehane and first-timer Tommy Mescal joining us on Your Politics podcast. If you do like our programme, please do leave some comments. We love to hear from you. If you want to hear more, our colleague Fiacro Kiona is also doing some new extra programmes for Your Politics podcast on some of political crises of the past. So please do subscribe, Your Politics podcast, and we'll hear from you next week.